Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 596, The Last of the Prelates, recorded live on September 19th, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And I'm still recovering a little bit from the back pain from last week, but it's been a lot better. And Godzilla T is a number zombie cast, at least for a little while. At least that's the idea, right?
Yeah, I actually got to come home at a normal time tonight.
Yay! That's awesome. So hopefully it'll be
very much so
non-zombie Godzilla T on the show for the foreseeable future, which would be awesome. But we are back on a regular schedule of Tuesdays for those that didn't hear from the last episode, which has been released yet because I was still doctoring back pain. I decided to be stupid and injure my back. That kind of kicked us off schedule a little bit. But we're back on the Tuesdays, and for the first time in, I want to say, at least 2 years, maybe a little more than that, we're actually having a book discussion. Yay!
Yay!
Unfortunately, I don't think we have any of like the crazy lore people in here. We have Laird, and he's pretty good with the lore, so we will have him to kind of lean on for now. And Pins as well, but Toa Freak and Fudge aren't in here yet, at least, so maybe they'll pop on later and they'll help correct us on our review of the book. And Pins is saying, one step closer to Halsey's journal. That one's gonna take a while, dude. Don't hold your breath on that one. We still have a lot of other books to go through, and honestly,
that one might be a podcast series.
Depending on how we break up the journal, it could be.
Oh, yeah, definitely all over the place.
Then I haven't even looked at the torn out pages.
I haven't either.
Let's go ahead and jump into a little bit of news, get that out of the way, and then we can get to our book discussion. So the only thing that we really have going for us is the latest community update, which showcased one of the new leaders that's going to be coming with the Awakening the Nightmare DLC, coming to Halo Wars 2 near the end of the month, which will be probably next week or so. The first leader that we have is Vordius. He's basically a brute captain of some kind, basically a brute leader, gifted with knowledge of Forerunner systems and being able to exploit the Ark for resources, for banished use, and all that fun stuff. And there's a couple of other units that he has to bring along with him. One is an infused engineer, which kind of alters a lot of the behaviors and I want to say kind of psychology of the way the engineers behave. There's a little bit of a description there that you can read up on the update. And then there's also brute grenadiers, which are basically, they almost look like brutes in mech suits.
I was going to say they look like Gundams.
Oh, kind of, yeah. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, you're right. That they have giant hand and chest pieces. They kind of, in a way, look like giant grunts. Kind of.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the two units, the infused engineer and the brute grenadiers, are going to be coming with Vordius, which is going to be one of the new leaders. And then there's a second leader, which they actually showcased on the stream, which would have been, I guess, on Thursday last week. They actually showcased the new leaders, Vordius and Pavium. So Pavium, they'll probably discuss in the next week update. But if you want to go check out the gameplay and what they discussed, they do have a VOD up on their Mixer channel. So you can head on over to Mixer.com/Halo and find that over there. Talking about anniversaries and stuff, 7 years ago, Reach was released. Winter Contingency, and before you, from the beginning, you know the end. At least that's kind of the motto there of the game. So there's Reach that was out. I guess it was September 15th of 2010. So yeah, Reach came out. And then there is September 25th, which will be the 10-year anniversary for Halo 3. And on that day, they will be debuting the Halo 3 Classic playlist for Halo 5 matchmaking. That'll probably be double XP that weekend as well. And I'm not sure how long that playlist is going to be around, but I'm sure it'll be around for as long as there's a good population in that playlist. They will be having a, I guess, community play date of sorts on September 25th as well. So they'll be online to, or the Sketch and Bravo and Jeff and Unishek will probably be all on to play with the community a little bit. So if you're still looking for that 3-for-3 ice skin, that might be a good way to hop on and kind of relive some of the Halo 3 feels just with the Halo 5 mechanic.
And from what I've been hearing, the new tune on the BR makes it shoot a lot like the Halo 3 BR.
Oh.
Just all over the place.
So unfortunately, the weapon tuning thing won't be finalized until November, so...
Yeah, I was watching a video earlier, and he did not have a lot of good things to say about the weapon tune that is currently in the playlist.
So to me, it kind of makes sense that the... Because the way they made the BR sound like they were tuning it, to have that... to be a little more of that mid-range to close-range effectiveness. Adjusting the spread, I think, would be one of the things that they would do to enforce that.
Well,
so it sounds like that's kind of what they did. The complaint
is it's not a consistent spread. It doesn't shoot the same every time.
Neither did the Halo 3 BR.
Yeah, that's the point.
I think that's fine.
Well, I mean, for tournament play, you want a predictable weapon.
So they're probably going to start throwing DMRs in there.
Yeah. I mean, even on the Gunfighter Magnum, it is just all over the place at close range.
Okay, I can see that being a problem.
The BR is not a whole lot better. The shots just go everywhere.
So it's a little too lax.
Yeah, in Halo 3, MLG had to adjust the damage settings so that it was a more competitive weapon. They still wanted to make, they still wanted it to be a 4-shot weapon, so they bumped the damage to up 10% so that random bullet that goes off makes a right turn out of the barrel of the gun doesn't affect kill time. I understand that you want spread, and the faster you pull the trigger, the more spread there should be. But if you are pacing your shots, that shot should be close.
Well, that first bullet out of the barrel, I would assume, should be pretty much dead on. And then the subsequent bullets could probably be a little bit out. But if they're doing it to where that first bullet is all the way in Timbuktu, then I could see, yeah, that definitely an issue that should be addressed.
Yeah, that's, that's just, it's one of the complaints I've heard so far. And their supposed nerf on the automatic weapons has done nothing to make them weaker.
Really?
I was watching this guy's gameplay, and that plasma rifle, oh my lord. He's getting doubles and triples out of it.
They weren't changing the plasma rifle.
Yeah, they were.
They were?
Uh-huh.
I thought they were just changing the carbine.
No, the automatic weapons. The SMG, plasma rifle.
Yeah, I didn't think they were touching the plasma rifle.
Yeah, they were touching the plasma rifle and the SMG. The ones that really do need a nerf because they are overpowered.
I remember the SMG was on there.
I think there was a little note on the plasma rifle, but... Oh, they made some changes to it.
Plasma rifle was not in the tuning news item that they put out. It's AR, BR, carbine, DMR, gunfighter magnum, SMG, active camo, energy sword, beam rifle, fuel rod cannon, grenade launcher, and railgun. Nowhere in here is a plasma rifle
mentioned. Okay. Well, they haven't. Whatever tune they got on the SMG has not made it any worse. Let's put it that way.
less effective. Well, we'll try to use some PC terms here.
The problem weapons are, you know, the automatics, at least in this person's opinion, are the automatics, the plasma rifle, the SMG, the brute plasma rifle. Those are the weapons that really need a nerf because they are so easy just to rip through people. They're so accurate in that close to medium range. I mean, yeah, if you're going to cross map, no, it's not going to work, but you get in close quarters with one of those things and you can just tear through people.
So close quarters, that kind of makes sense.
I saw this guy pull a triple kill and he's a pro player, pull a triple kill with no shields and very little health.
With a plasma rifle?
With a plasma rifle.
That doesn't seem too unrealistic. At least to me, it doesn't seem that way.
Except for he's playing pro players.
Okay, maybe that's an issue.
I mean, it's not like he's playing a bunch of noobs. But, you know, it's... They're still
if you're close range, I think you only need adjustments. Three or four...
Basically, what I was going to say is, you know, if they take that BR and put it in this playlist, then it would feel like Halo 3.
I wonder, because there were plasma rifles in Halo 3. I wonder how they match up. The weapon tuning stuff, unfortunately, we won't see in the Halo 3 playlist. Depending on how long the playlist is around, we might, but I don't know. For now, it's just going to be your default Halo 5 stuff, but it's all good. Let's see, what else we have? Over the past weekend, Double XP was in the weapons tuning test playlist, Super Fiesta, and Mythic Warzone. The first issue of Rise of Atriox is out. I actually got to read that since they gave them away at Community Day. It was a pretty interesting start to a comic, and kind of some a little bit different behaviors out of, I guess, what kind of was considered the Covenant at the time, but I don't want to spoil it too much. Do you have one of them, Laird, or had a chance to read the comic at all?
I have not.
Laird, I don't know why I said Laird. God, GT.
I'm the ones operating on no sleep.
Well, I haven't been sleeping that much either. Last night was the first night I actually
got... No, I have not seen it, but I did watch Toa Freak's video on it, and... Okay. It looks really impressive. So far, seriously looking at seeing if I can pick up a copy.
I've got a few extra physical copies if you want one of just the first issue, but other issues I do not have. I do like the pacing of this first comic and the way it just kind of opens it up. It's kind of just in your face in the heat of the moment type of scenario. And it's just kind of a, whoa, that was a pretty intense start. So I think I'm going to like it.
Like I said, it looks really interesting to me.
Yeah, me too. We also have Back Compat. It's actually getting pretty close. It's actually in the Xbox Back Compat team for review. And they're judging by kind of the sounds of what Grim put in here, it sounds like we could see it maybe within the month. Maybe by the end of the month. Who knows? But Back Compat is making progress.
Yes. You know, they haven't even launched the actual Xbox Back Compat yet, so for any of the games. So it'd be nice to hear that or see that looks like Halo will launch with it.
What do you mean? Because Back Compat's there.
The 360 Back Compat, not Xbox Back Compat. At least I haven't seen any of my games.
Oh, you're talking about that. Oh, well, these are all 360 titles.
Therp. Never mind.
I was like, wait, what do you mean by Xbox? Yeah, I don't remember what exactly is going on with... It's been a while since I totally forgot until you just said something that they were even looking into the original Xbox Back Compat. Yeah, you're right. But this will be just 360 stuff, so that'll probably come out before... Whenever that Back Compat hits. I have a feeling that's probably going to hit around the November timeframe so they can get the holiday sales off of it.
Could be.
Because, like, hey, you can play your old classic games by just inserting your disc and then having the new console. So if you got rid of your old one, you can actually play your old library of games. That'd be a console seller right there.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. The only one that I will have to put, I'll have to find my disc again, is for Halo CE Anniversary, because that one was never released digitally, so. Although I might buy it digitally.
That wasn't released digitally. Oh, wow.
No, it was always just on the disc.
Huh, okay. I mean, at least you already have half of the disc anyways, because it's Reach. And all that DLC is free now, so you already have half the game right there.
Yeah, basically just be the, you know, Halo CE campaign.
Which will still be cool. It would be interesting to see if they keep the 3D capability with Halo CE Anniversary.
Oh, the compatibility with 3D televisions?
Yeah, that's actually a good question to ask the 343 folks.
I don't know.
I'm going to do that right now, actually. And a few other people.
That is an interesting question. I know the Kinect function won't be there, but...
Well, I mean, you do have Kinect on Xbox One.
Yeah, but none of the Kinect... None of the games that support Kinect work. The Kinect doesn't work with those games. The new one doesn't. Apparently, there was a major redesign of the Kinect, and it just doesn't work with the older titles. That's why you don't see any Kinect games on... back compat, which I mean doesn't really hurt my feelings that much, but
yeah, I mean if you really want to do it, you can just whip out your old console and have fun there, if you still have your old console. That is,
I still have mine.
My Halo 4 console sits right beside my Xbox One.
Mine's sitting right next to mine too,
and I'll turn it on every now and then and play some
here in another month game. There'll be a Scorpio sitting right next to it.
Yay, awesome. I did download Halo 5 and Halo Master Chief Collection on my fiance's Xbox. So we'll be playing.
Which took a while.
Yeah, and then when I turned it on again this week, it had an update for Halo 5. Yeah, it took a little
updates,
while.
Updates, updates, and more updates.
Exactly. So that was back compat. In the community spotlight, Grim basically did a... This is not technically canon, but we like to consider it canon for Fistful of Arrows. So that was kind of cool. For everyone who doesn't know, Fistful of Arrows was a community-done comic book of sorts done by Leviathan. A lot of people probably know of his work, or at least if you were here back in the kind of Halo 3, Halo Reach, Halo 4 days. And it kind of tells the tale of June, and I think a little bit of Halsey, after the events of Reach, and kind of gave June a little bit of backstory. And Grimm says it's not technically canonical, but Oni has also covered up a whole lot of things that didn't technically exist. So it's almost like Grimm was like blessing this off without officially blessing this off as canon.
Yeah. That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. I mean that's as close to a nod as you're going to get without getting the lawyers involved, I think.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess. A Fistful of Arrows is still available to read free of charge over on Bungie.org. It's, if you go to leviathan.bungie.org, then you can find the comic there. And there is even a soundtrack that goes with it, too. So you can get that as well. There is some renders that were done as well by Wang Time, the person that was behind Ultimate Halo, and he's really good with like After Effects, Photoshop, and all that good stuff. So if you want to take a look at some more of his screenshot or some of his renders, then head on over to the bulletin as well. There is a little blurb about the Nornfang that got contributed, which I thought was in a previous update, but I guess it was in the latest one. There's also some screenshots, which one of my favorite has to be the grunt that's just hanging off of the tree.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Or the one screen from the Halo tutor with the jackal looks like he's riding on a chalkboard and then the elite just standing there. with the caption of, anyone else ask off a year in advance for a midnight game release? No, just me. but that's it for the update.
I did. Was 3 months.
Yeah.
Scheduled vacation.
Nice. I don't know if I've ever taken off. No, well, I think there may have been a time I asked my professor to skip a class in college. So that may have happened. But I haven't been to a midnight launch since Halo 4.
Yeah, the only midnight launch I went to was Reach. And then I promptly came home and went to bed because I was exhausted.
It's like, I'll be up for this nice fun thing and then I'm just going to go back and go to sleep.
Yeah, pretty much. I had actually planned on firing it up and at least playing through a couple of missions, but man, I got home and I could barely keep my eyes open. What the heck with it?
It's hard to do it now. At least just being older. At least it feels that way. And thanks, Pins, for the link to the Fistful of Arrows. So he posted it in the Twitch chat. I'll go ahead and post it in the Mixer chat as well for all of you Mixer listeners over there. So let's go ahead and jump on into the main discussion, which is going to be Shadow of Intent. So we finally got a book done. Yay.
Dust finally got a book done.
That is an accurate statement. It was one of the shortest books that I knew I could read within a week. So that's why I picked it. but let's see, how should we start off with this? It kind of, did you kind of get a sense of where it was in relation to the Halo 3 timeline? It seemed like it was either before Halo 3 or after Halo 3. Maybe after?
Well, it took place after the events of Halo 3.
Okay, so it was after. I couldn't quite figure it out on my read through, and maybe that was just because I missed the cue somewhere, or I just didn't.
Well, at the very beginning, they start talking about the shipmaster, which I can't think of his name now.
I just Ratass.
Yeah, he's the shipmaster in Halo 2 that has the missing jaw. And how
does half jaw?
Yes. They start out by kind of giving a little backstory on him. You know, they tell you how that, you know, originally he was really against the Arbiter. He didn't approve of the Arbiter, and he even was not very approving. Well, he really didn't like it when he teamed up with humanity to stop the Halos.
I think a lot of the Sanshayum did not like that.
No, he's not a Sanshayum. He's an elite.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were still talking about the
problem. No, I'm talking about Half-Jaw.
Sorry.
He was pretty vengeful towards the Arbiter for teaming up with humans to stop the Halos and the Flood, but when the Prophets and Brutes betrayed the Elites, then he came around to the Arbiter's way of thinking.
That's right.
And okay, he became pretty much the Arbiter's right-hand man. He was charged with taking Shadow of Intent away from the fight so that the Brutes wouldn't get their hands on it, because you know, this is a carrier. It is a very powerful ship.
And it was one of the best ships in the fleet, especially from what the Elites had.
Yeah. But, I mean, the main characters, you have Half-Jaw, you have the Blade Master, which is, he's exactly what that is. What that states is he's a master of energy swords, and he has a unique dual wield energy sword technique that he's mastered. Then you have a grunt elite ranger.
I know, that was kind of cool to see, though.
I understand. Yeah, I thought it was really cool too. And then you have, oh, what did they call her?
Oh, the I know you're talking about the elite with the red armor,
right?
I'm trying to go back and look at it as I rapidly swipe back through the book. Skion? No. No, that's not the right
thing. That's what it is, but that's not how they pronounce it.
Someone wants to... Well, you're the one with the audiobook, so you know
how to pronounce. But I don't have the audiobook with me right at the moment. I think it's actually Sion. No, that's not right. But anyway, she's basically on a revenge trip. And then you have the prelate, which is a genetically altered Sam Shayum, who is...
Can kick some major butt.
He's on par with a Sangeli.
Arguably more so in some circumstances.
Well, yeah, he could keep up or outperform a Sangeli for a short period of time. He had a limited amount of, for lack of a better word, energy reserves to be able to expend while in a fight. So he's really good for a short period of time.
Yeah, and there's like chemical enhancements or like neurological enhancers that he could use for a certain duration. And then part of his, I guess, armor or suit or whatever tech that he was wearing would kind of notify him if he's expended too much, or he could feel it within like his body, whether or not he's like gotten dizzy or something. And
he starts to lose his mind.
Yeah.
Because the chemicals, because the prelates are trained to release these chemicals into their body, endorphins, adrenaline, they can control their physical chemical reactions of their body. And they know that how hard they can push before their body just simply collapses.
And Laird basically is
puts
saying
it pretty straightforward. He's a Sanchayum Spartan.
Basically. Without the exoskeleton armor.
But he does have Forerunner. He does have armor that's more closely based on the Forerunner armor than what they gave the Sangheili.
Including a hardlight shield. Which it was kind of interesting to see in some of the fights where he used the corners of the hardlight shield as basically a sword or a sharp edge.
Or a guillotine.
Yeah. that is true. There was one scene in there where he chopped off Elite's head.
And then the final main character is an actual prophet, and he was in charge of basically Forerunner relic research on High Charity.
He was the Minister of Prophecy, right?
Minister of
be something.
I don't think it was prophecy, but
preparation. Thanks, Pins.
Preparation. That's right. Thank you, Pins. But those are the main characters that you hear from throughout the story. The story starts off. Excuse me. The story starts off with Halfjaw and the Shadow of Intent responding to a distress call on the planet where the Sion, the female, she's a female warrior, lives. And what had happened is the prelate had attacked this colony and taken her father and two other Sangheili prisoner.
And yeah, the prelate and the other prof, Shan Shayum, the Minister of Preparation, took these prisoners to a hidden Forerunner facility. And there is this Forerunner artifact that they were testing on the Shan Shayum. And the opening scene actually starts out with the prophets, and then after their experiment, it actually jumps to Halfjaw and the Blade Master.
Yeah, that's right. Get my order wrong.
It's all right. I was getting to it, Laird. Just hold on. Got to build the suspense a little bit here. So they were doing some experiments, and they had talked about, like, there's some riffraff back and forth between the Minister and the prelate, and they start arguing about noting the Sanctuary singing, and there's a little bit of discussion in here about the changeover from the brutes kind of taking over, protecting the prophets from the Sanctuary, and about some of the understanding of the foreigner relics. And after they activated this artifact, they were looking to see what it caused or what it did to the elites, and turned out after they activated it, there was absolutely no trace of them left.
They were beyond vaporized.
Not a single speck of dust, not any residue, nothing. Nothing was left. And this is where the minister and the prelate are about to go, and they want to capture the Shadow of Intent and exact some revenge, which we learn about a little bit later on. So the minister's name is actually Boru Anaim, and then the prelate is Tim Bektek. Patek.
Patek.
Okay. Or Tim for short.
I'll go with prelate.
Okay, that's fine. And this is where we actually jump to the scene with the shipmaster and the blade master Halfjaw and the blade master coming up on the planet of Ranello, which was the planet that got attacked by the Sanctuary, and they responded to their distress call. That's right, Pins. There are some who call him Tim.
Tim. Yes. They kind of bounce back and forth between Tim and the prelate, but the Shadow of Intent responds to the distress call. Of course, this is several days later, because it just takes them that long to get to Ranello. And they come down and land in a phantom. And the funny thing about that, the whole part where they're coming in on the phantom, you hear, you know, Halfjaw's asking the pilot all, you know, he exhausts all the critical questions on the way down, cause he's nervous. At least that's the way it felt to me. And, you know, they make a point of saying that he's asked all the questions he can without seeming like he's impatient or nervous about something. To the point where he's scanning a storm, knowing full well that it poses no threat to the Phantom.
He's kind of
just
fidgety.
To keep himself busy. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a couple places in here where he's talking about just how he had never really seen a Sangheili world just kind of get attacked like this before, and the devastation of what the Flood have caused in prior engagements, and whether or not he wants to go on fighting anymore. And then he tells himself that's a cowardice way of thinking. So there's kind of this back and forth in his mind of just some realizations that he's coming to of what's really taking place now with some of the past incidents, which will actually come to a little bit later in the book with the Flood and the Covenant. Now what's happening on the Sanctuary world.
But Halfjaw, he's having a real moral crisis. He doesn't know what he wants to do. He's questioning whether or not he wants to continue to be the shipmaster of Shadow of Intent. You know, he's basically looking to, you know, find a nice quiet spot and disappear.
He wants to retire. And once when they get to the ground, they kind of see some of the damage done at the port. They saw some brutes that were that had been killed, laying kind of strewn around, and some other Sangheili also laying around that they were trying to identify or kind of pull out from underneath either piles of brutes or whatever they got hit up against. And I think they said at some point that like some of the bodies were like frozen stiff or something like that. Can't remember exactly,
Well, you know, it is a snow-covered planet, so yeah.
And we have another Halo animal to add to the list, the Dunak, which I'm guessing is some kind of, like, horse type of animal or something.
Probably more like a bison with a trunk.
I was thinking either, like, something horse or something cow.
But it would be probably, well, the way they use it, it'd be more like, you know, a bison or a bull, you know, something that you would use to pull a heavy cart. In this case, it's pulling a sled. The first group they come across is they find a Dunak dead with its sled overturned, which is funny. In the audiobook, they call it a sledge. I'm like, okay.
A sledge.
Yeah, I'm not the one reading the book. But it throws me every time he says, it's a sled. Come on, just say it. It's a sled. But anyway, dead Dunak and then an overturned sled. And they realize that the person guiding the animal had purposely basically jackknifed the animal with the sled and turned it over to provide himself cover. They find two Jilorhane bodies. The first one they come across, they can see, you know, a slash mark across the chest where the Sangheili's energy sword cut him. And then they find the other one, and he's laying face down in the snow. They roll him over with some effort. Apparently, brutes aren't that light. And find the Sangheili under him. And the way they describe this Sangheili is he's in his ninth decade.
So he's an old fart.
Yeah, he's old. But the thing that they point out is the Blade Master, which, you know, he's elderly, not quite as old as the guy that they just found. You know, he basically makes the comment, I hope I'm that good when I reach that age. And then because the Blade Master and Halfjaw, you know, they're really good friends. So, you know, they banter back and forth. Halfjaw basically turns around and says to him, you are that age. But, you know, this Sangheili was defending himself with nothing but an energy sword and a cloak made from the fur of the animal, of the Dunak. So it's really speaks to the physical fitness of elites to be it. You know, 90 plus years old, and to be able to kill two brutes. And granted, he lost his life in the process, but to be able to take that much punishment and still kill your attackers, that's impressive.
So at this point, this is where we see as we will find out in a couple of paragraphs, the current Kaidan of the keep. That's there. And then the wife or daughter of the previous Kaidan, or the one that was taken?
The one that comes approaching on another with another sled or sledge, whatever, is the daughter of the Kaidan.
Daughter, okay.
And her brother is riding the sled.
Who is the current Kaidan because...
Which, yeah, he is the current Kaidan because a little bit later we find out that the Kaidan and two other elites were captured.
And it just so happens to be that those were the ones that the prelate and the minister decided to experiment on.
Turn into nothing. You know, they have some conversation and the Scion is... as they begin to call her later, is, you know, really giving him an attitude because he didn't get there sooner, which, yeah, he got there as fast as he could. They basically pick up the bodies. They go back to the keep. Halfjaw asks to speak to the Kaidan, and the Scion says he's on the sledge. And it takes Halfjaw a moment to realize she's not talking about one of the bodies on the sled. Because that's what she's out doing. She's picking up the Sangheili bodies. It's her brother, which he's basically not even quite a teenager yet.
And he's putting the pieces together of like, okay, either the previous Cardinal was killed or something happened. And then a little bit later on, as they're walking, Half-Joff realizes that Tol Jaron, which is her name, is actually wearing armor that would be of kind of the Kaidan's ranks. So he called it out as of her being the daughter of the Kaidan, which she kind of acknowledges with a respectful nod. It's like, oh, so you do know your stuff. You're not that out of tune with what's going on. As they're getting to the town, the Half-Jaw was trying to kind of figure out what was going on. So he wanted to talk to her father. And she said that she can't because the Kaidan was now her brother. So they get to the village. They start helping out with the bodies, and that's where she starts to wants to go looking for her father, because after the attack he went missing. So they were under the assumption that he may have come back. And I think it was at this point that Half-Jaw kind of put some things together in such a way where he was able to figure out that if they hadn't seen them by now, then they were definitely taken. And that would be one of the reasons why the brutes didn't completely just glass the village.
This is also about the time where they figure out that it wasn't a brute chieftain leading them. It was a prelate.
Which kind of took them by surprise.
I like the way they do that. You know, she makes the comment that she wants to go after her father, and the blade master starts asking about the leader, and he makes the comment, well, how big was his hammer? And then she turns and says, it wasn't a brute, it was a prelate. And that really gets Half-Jaw's attention.
And I could understand why, given the situation. And then she called upon some right to avenge her father's capture. I forget what the right was called, but it was something of a discussion between the Blade Master and Half-Jaw of like, do you really want to follow through with this? This is kind of unprecedented, not protocol.
Well, it's against tradition. Females don't generally serve in the military. They generally stay at home, and they will protect a keep, and they are capable of protecting a keep if, you know, the males are gone, which, you know, they make mention of that in several of the other books. But she invokes the right to find and free her father.
Right of release.
Right of
That's
release.
That's what it's called.
Okay. And there's discussion between the Blade Master and Half-Jaw, because the Blade Master is really old school. He doesn't believe that a woman should serve in the military, let alone on a starship. And, you know, this discussion just kind of goes back and forth. And, you know, Half-Jaw has already agreed to it, and, you know, she's coming. And they get back to Shadow of Intent, and this discussion continues, and this is where you learn about the Ungoy.
Yes, and I love this part. And there's a thing in here saying that, or there was a line in here, I think this was Half-Jaw saying to the Blade Master, if you can get used to a Ungoy Ranger, you can get used to a female elite.
If you can get used to having an Ungoy lead your Rangers, you can handle the woman. And she is a very accomplished fighter. You learn, you know, as the book goes through, you see that.
And he was like, he's earned his title for sure. They mentioned that he's a little bit taller than most grunts, but he has the leadership roles and characteristics, and he's bested even some of the elite Rangers in combat. So he's definitely earned his stripes, to use kind of a colloquialism.
And I like the way they described how he would win against these elites. He'd basically let the elites beat on him until they get tired out.
And then he would just pummel them. After taking so much abuse, the grunts kind of finally learned a different kind of stall tactic. It's kind of funny.
Well, he's, you know, like we've already mentioned, he's bigger than your average grunt. And grunts have a real, it's not really a hard skin, but it's a real scaly skin. So it can take a lot of punishment before you have gaping wounds in it. So basically, he would just take all this punishment from these elites, let them wear themselves out, and then he would take, you know, his fist and just beat the snot out of them. It was more of a test of endurance than anything. He raised himself through the ranks of the Rangers to the point that now he leads the Ranger team. So this is one tough grunt.
And we even see Halfjaw go to him for advice on the situation, saying, "Do you think this is a good idea?" And he's like, "If you want to, I don't remember exactly, but it's like, if you're looking to go after a prelate, then yeah,
we need all the help we can get."
Exactly. There's a couple of paragraphs in here talking about the Shadow of Intent ship and the changeover of when the brutes took over the elite's responsibilities and some of the battle wounds being able to be seen closer up and whatnot. We're just going to kind of skip through some of that. I don't remember seeing in here where they decided where they were going to go to find the prelate and the captors of...
Well, they received another distress call.
Okay, that was it. Okay. I knew I missed something somewhere. Thank you for catching it.
They'd received another distress call from another planet where there was a Sangheili settlement. And they responded to it, and lo and behold, the prelate was there.
Dun, dun, dun. Shocker. But before we get to that, we actually have kind of flashback of the prelate. It goes back to, he has this recurring dream of he's out on, I guess, missions or whatnot, and he's coming back to High Charity to meet up with his partner or wife, I guess, and the brand new baby that they just had, baby Shan Shayum. I wonder what that would look like.
They start describing the prelate and how, with the genetic modifications they've done, he's basically automatically on the roll of celibates, where he is not allowed to breed. But all of his hard work for the minister pulls strings and gets him off the roll of celibates, and they pair him with his wife, who she works with the lower ranking members of the Covenant.
And her name is Yalar Otan Elat.
Yalar
for short.
Yeah. But, you know, they start by, you know, describing that point and getting you up to the point where they're married and she's pregnant. And the baby comes while the prelate is out on a mission. He's on his way back to High Charity when the upheaval begins.
When the Flood invade.
When he gets, as he's coming into the system, the Flood infects High Charity. That's when the...
What's the ship?
Ford
Unto Dawn?
No.
In Amberclad.
In Amberclad jumps into the...
High Charity.
Into High Charity and crashes in the scene in Halo 3. And it starts to spread.
Rapidly.
Initially, the prelate and all the brute forces were trying to, you know, attack the Sangheili ships to take him out. And they were actually winning until the Flood attacked.
Which caused some things to change.
Halo 2. Not Halo 3. Halo 2. Is this right?
Halo 2. I thought you said Halo 2. But yeah, we know.
No, I said Halo 3. Eric Yabu corrected me. Although he spelt Halo wrong.
Fat
fingers. But, you know, they're talking about how, you know, the brute ships are taking on the elite fleet. How they had already destroyed one of the carriers. Basically, Shadow was Intent's twin. But the flood attack, and then the prophets call their fleet back into High Charity for evacuation purposes to get as many people off of High Charity as they can, mainly the prophets and the Hergok. The prelate is called back as well, and the minister tells the prelate that High Charity's overrun, there's no one left. So he loads up the minister and they leave. And then this is where the dream part comes in, is in his dream, instead of saving the minister, he goes back to save his wife and his newborn child. He gets to their home and finds her in her bed
with the
holding the child. And she's singing to the child to keep it calm. And at this point, I think it mentions that two elite guards come in to take the baby. And this is when the flood moves into the dream. You know, two tentacles pop out of Yolar's body and basically kill the elite guards. And she tells the prelate to take the baby and get the baby out. The rest of his dream is him fighting to get out. Up to the point where he sees Shadow of Intent enter High Charity and begin glassing to sterilize the flood.
And I think at that point, too, wasn't the Shadow of Intent also shooting down potential flood carrier ships that were occupied by...
Not at that point. After that, after they'd realized that the infection had gone too far, they'd cordoned off High Charity and were destroying any ships that were, or they were attempting to destroy all the ships that were leaving. The prelate ship was one that made it by the blockade.
And that's when the prelate wanted revenge. Revenge on all the betrayal that was caused by the Shadow of Intent. It kind of explains the beginning of the book.
And he blames Halfjaw and the Shadow of Intent for the loss of his wife and his daughter, or wife and his child. The neat thing is, in a message to the prelate, Yolar sent a message to the prelate, and you have to understand that pretty much every communication the prelate has is monitored. And she wanted to tell the prelate that she'd had the baby, but she didn't want to say, "We've had a baby." So she worded it. She worded it like this: "We two are now three." And I thought that was just kind of a nice turn of phrase.
I mean, you know exactly what that means, but it's not going to, I guess, raise suspicions too much. I mean, that's pretty obvious to me, so I don't know getting by any filters if that would really work. But,
well, you know, it could mean a lot of things. It could mean somebody else moved in. But if you don't know what's going on.
I guess, yeah.
But I thought it was a pretty elegant way to word it.
I think so, too. So that he got through the dream, he was able to identify the Shadow of Intent being the ship that basically caused extermination of so many Shanshayum and inhabitants of High Charity when the flood attacked, and basically leaving everyone to die who was trying to escape as they started shooting those refuge ships that are trying to escape out of High Charity out of the sky. And then this is where we jump back to present time, with the Shadow of Intent arriving at Duran, which is where the second distress signal came from. And lo and behold, what they find there is the prelate ship, of all things. They do just describe in here a little bit of the characteristics of the system that they're in, that it suffers from very high electromagnetic fluctuations from the sun, and can kind of interfere with the tech that they have on ships, and then the shields can be degraded as well. And when they saw that the ship was there, I think it was trying to run away from the other side of the planet?
That's what they made it look like, yeah. The prelate ship, as soon as it spotted the Shadow of Intent, started to burn around the planet in what you could assume as an escape orbit. And they made comment that the prelate ship's shields were much weaker than Shadow's Intent. So, you know, they had the advantage. They had more weapon. You know, they had more powerful weapons. They had more powerful shields. They're basically showing overconfidence in their ship. During this time, Halfjaw is calculating what is the trap.
Yeah, because he knows it's a prelate.
Because he's been caught in enough ambushes that he looks at the situation and says, okay, why is he doing what he's doing? What is the trap that he's wanting to spring? Because Halfjaw knows that the prelate's at a disadvantage. He's fought prelates before. He knows that the prelate knows he's at a disadvantage. So what's the twist?
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the whole Know Your Enemy campaign thing for Halo Wars 2. Kind of like that back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. Just trying to get in the other person's head to try to figure out what their plan is. And, you know, so at this point, the prelate ship is basically going balls out around the planet. They lose track of his ship on the far side of the planet, and they plot an intercept course to the side of the planet that the prelate ship will be coming out on and start to charge the weapons. When the prelate ship appears on the other side of the planet, they find that the prelate has turned the ship around, and now the engines are facing the Shadow of Intent, and they're at a full burn. You know, like they were trying to change direction. But their inertia is still carrying them towards Shadow of Intent. So they launch a volley of plasma. And as it travels towards there,
it dissipates.
It starts to dissipate and go off course because of the magnetic interference from the sun.
So for those of you who don't know, this has been explained in previous books. But the way that the, I guess, plasma torpedoes, I'll just call them that, work is that there's a magnetic field that contains the plasma that is actually controlled by the ship. And that's what actually leads the plasma to its target. And with the electromagnetic interference from the sun, the ship can't maintain that magnetic field around the plasma. So the plasma starts to dissipate and then cool down as it just kind of spreads out.
Yeah, they lose the ability to contain the plasma in the field so that its full impact strikes, and they also lose the ability to actually guide it. So the next thing, you know, they prepare for a second shot, except this time they go with their point lasers and they fire. And he basically tells them to fire on, you know, on alternating turrets. So it's more like of a barrage than just an all out fire everything. But as you know, we just said the magnetic field or electromagnetic interference still is screwing with the weapons, even at this close range. He does do some damage to the ship, to the prelate ship, but not enough to destroy it. And at this point, now the prelate ship is next to Shadow of Intent. They're basically side by side. Somebody mentions escape pods, don't they?
Yeah, they use the escape pods of the...
No, I meant somebody on Shadow of Intent mentions escape pods, right?
Oh, I think just that they saw the... Maybe they just saw them get ejected off the ship,
or escape pods, and then the light bulb clicks in Halfjaw's head. of what the prelate's plan is. The prelate's plan is to take the Shadow of Intent.
Oh, yeah, because once, yeah, it says once Half-Jaw heard the word escape pod, he knew it immediately what the trap was. And that's when he ordered everyone to all hands for close quarters battle. And then this is where the fun begins.
The prelates basically got himself and 50 brutes to take the ship.
Yeah, and the thing with the escape pods from their ship is that they had a high straight line velocity, I guess, release.
The reason he was using the escape pods is because they accelerate really, really fast. So it makes them really hard to hit.
And then just after 15 seconds, which they must have been pretty close, the ships must have been pretty close to each other, they actually start their deceleration burns. So they don't just completely smash in flat to the ship. But the one thing that the prelate was counting on, or actually two things, was that the magnetic interference from the sun would affect their ability to use lasers against all of the escape pods, which it worked because they had to alternate between laser turrets because of the slower ability to recharge those laser cannons. And then having the shields weak enough to where they could punch through and make sure that their trajectory was on point where they were able to fly into their loading dock. Just so happens that all those variables happened to line up and they got on board the ship, and when they got out of their pods, they were already met by some elite rangers, and then they started engaging in battle. That's when the prelate started sending orders to different squads of brutes, and he started to identify where he needed his forces to focus on engaging. So he wanted some of the brute teams to go take the engine room, and he was working on trying to get to the command deck so they could take over the ship.
And this is where you start hearing about how the prelates can basically control their body chemistry. Definitely makes the point of not pushing himself too hard so that he has enough to fight Half-Jaw, because he intends on killing him. His goal there is to kill Half-Jaw and take his ship. But in the process of doing that, he gets outmaneuvered to a point, but he also outmaneuvers the Half-Jaw and gets past him to get to the command bridge. And they also
past Half-Jaw, does he?
Yes. He actually gets past Half-Jaw and is running for the command bridge. And at this point, he's basically says he doesn't need to look at a layout of the ship because he's run through it so many times in his mind. And even sometimes finds his wife sitting on the bridge with their baby.
Oh, yeah, the dream stuff. So he started seeing those ghosts and getting distracted. And I think, was it the Ungoy or the female elite that stopped him?
The Ungoy knocks him out. But what happens is, as he approaches the command bridge, he basically sees his wife. And
hallucinating.
Yeah, because he's been pushing himself so hard, and you know, these chemicals, they mess with the mind. But he sees his wife, and she basically says she's not proud of the path he's taken. And this is an important point in the prelate's story, because you start to see him question why he's doing what he's doing. It starts to creep more into the story. But basically, that stops him in his tracks. The Ungoy catches up to him, knocks him out. Next thing you know, he wakes up and he's in the brig.
And across the room, sitting from him in his cell, is Half-Jaw, surprisingly unarmed.
Funny thing I find is they take his helmet off, but they leave his armor on.
Yeah, I don't know.
If I'm putting somebody in the brig, I'm probably not going to give them and let them keep their armor.
Well, he also had restraints on as well, so it's not like he could easily get to it.
It's just one of those things.
At this point, this is where they start to exchange stories of what happened on High Charity. And this is where we really start to see if there's a difference in story, which there happens to be. I forget how exactly the conversation started off. I know they talked about all the brutes being dead. They captured the ship. They went through the database and found an interesting location, which they were on the way to, which was the place at the beginning of the book where they did the experiments.
Yeah, where they're headed to this Forerunner installation.
Yeah, that's in either uncharted or hidden quadrant somewhere that has been kind of off the radars of every other Covenant ship, I guess, so to speak.
Well, the prophets knew about, well, I should say Truth knew about the facility. That's how this particular minister had found it. He had discovered it in some of the records. And they basically had made it a prohibited sector of space. You know, no ships were allowed to go there. But Halfjaw and the prelate are talking. You know, he's basically interrogating the prelate, trying to find out what he's flying towards. And the prelate is still not quite right. He's still recovering from overexerting himself.
Well, I found the line in here where it kind of makes that transition of talking about the hidden sector and the artifact that was there. And Halfjaw actually mentions he wants to know how or why the only prelate to survive High Charity deems it so important to keep that artifact hidden, and why it's permissible to murder thousands of innocent elites. And then this is where it goes into them kind of arguing back and forth about the day on High Charity, where Shadow of Intent started glassing parts of High Charity and killing thousands of innocents trying to stop the flood. And what was thought to be an act of betrayal on Halfjaw's side is revealed by Halfjaw telling his side of the story as this was his only course of action to prevent the flood. It wasn't out of spite. It wasn't out of retaliation. It was out of trying to look at the bigger picture. And then we see the prelate start to kind of question what he's been told of what happened on High Charity and what happened to his wife and kid.
It's basically Halfjaw says, yeah, when I was there, there were still Sanshum alive. That the flood infestation wasn't that large yet, and he was trying to contain it. That's why he basically started glassing the city. Unfortunately, it was too little too late. You know, by the time Shadow of Intent was in position to start cleansing the city, the infection had already spread too far. And he makes a statement, basically, if he could have saved anybody, he would have. But it just was not possible.
And the thought that was going back through his head was, if what Halfjaw was telling him was true, then there could have been a chance to save his wife, which kind of makes him feel like he's responsible then for her death, for not trying to save her.
And of course, you know, the prelate initially basically calls Halfjaw a liar, and Halfjaw comes back with, well, that's someone's lying to you, but it's not me.
And then a whole bunch of those conversations went on. There's a plan that was struck up by Halfjaw and the Blade Master to split up the crew onto two phantoms, and they would use the Shadow of Intent kind of as a lure, because they knew with where they were going, there was a very high chance of ambush or something to happen if they were to be found.
Yeah, they basically took a minimal crew on this trip. They asked for volunteers, no more than than can fit in two phantoms. Everybody else stayed on Daniil.
Duron.
Duran, sorry, stayed on Duran while the Shadow of Intent went on this mission because the Half-Jaw knew it's a trap and he didn't want to spring the trap with a full crew. He wanted to be able to hide the crew on Phantoms. So what he did is he went to this Forerunner base, but he also entered slipspace much further away than any time, much further away from the installation than the prelate had jumped in his ship to buy him that extra time. And basically what they did is, as soon as the Shadow of Intent came out of slipspace, the two Phantoms dropped out and they remote piloted the ship.
Right. They had some preset course where the ship's AI matrix would kind of guide it along a certain pathway, and then if they need to make course adjustments, they could do so as the carrier was slave to the Phantom that Half-Jaw was on. And then at a certain point, the Shadow of Intent crossed some kind of barrier or something and caused some kind of radiation to happen, which started bringing up old memories and started really messing with the minds of everyone that was on both the Phantoms. And thankfully, because they were far out, it didn't have the full effect on them. But we soon learned that this was a miniature halo that they had run across.
It just had a real disorienting effect. They made comment that instead the pilot of Half-Jaw's Phantom, instead of speaking in Covenant dialect, he was speaking in an old Sangheili dialect. And Half-Jaw had to, struggle to put together, words to speak with him. It was really had to concentrate on what he was thinking and get the words out. And during this point, the prelate escapes.
Because he knew it was coming, and then he knew to clear his mind, which made recovery from the effects of Halo a lot quicker. And then, because he manages to escape his cell, he knocked out the Ungoy that was guarding him, and he came to a point where either some alarms went off in the Phantom, or Half-Jaw knew that the prelate was going to try to escape, so he went out of the bridge to try to cut him off, and the prelate manages to slip past him and basically jump off the ship and start jetpacking his way to the Forerunner installation.
Again, why'd you give him his helmet back?
Yeah, he wouldn't be able to breathe it. He didn't have it. The prelate eventually gets to the installation, and he meets up with the minister, and of course there's some dialogue back and forth as he's getting close, some radio dialogue of the prelate telling the minister, get the halo ready again for a second firing, and I have company behind me. And the prelate, or the minister is like, it'll be ready when it's ready, type of thing. So there's already some tension there between the two. And as the prelate gets onto the installation, the minister and him start to have a very changing of events discussion of what actually happened on High Charity. And the minister confessed that if he didn't lie to the prelate, then the prelate wouldn't have had the drive to help the minister go forth with his plans of trying to wipe out the Sangheili. And we also learned that this is the plot all along was to steal Shadow of Intent, put the miniature halo onto it, take it to Sanghelios, and activate it there to wipe out the elite homeworld.
The biggest point in there is that the reason the minister lied to the prelate was to enrage him so much that he would be willing to basically take on a suicide mission. Because in order to be able to fire the halo, they'd have to be in orbit of Sangheilios, and once it's fired, anything in the system would be dead, including whoever was on the ship.
Yep.
And the prelate makes a point of saying, to the minister, so who would be piloting Shadow of Intent? And you know, the minister says, well, up until now, it was going to be you.
And then he turned the drones on him.
Well, right at that same time, Half-Jaw and the Scion show up as well.
And a whole battle ensues. The end of it being, I'm kind of forget the end now. I don't know why.
Well, at this point, the prelate, Half-Jaw, and the Scion, they all kind of realize they're on the same side. And they start fighting the Yanmei that are there to, well, their original function was to operate the testing facility. But at this point, they're there to defend the minister. The minister escapes away in the elevator leading to the sheltered room, sheltered control room for the little miniature Halo.
Oh, that's right. And then didn't he try to activate the Halo? With the intent
of firing it again.
Yeah. And another important note here is something that they noted on the Halo is that because of all the stress, it really only had one firing left. So this charge up was going to be the last time this Halo would fire.
You know, this is a prototype Halo on a small scale. And earlier in the book, they do mention after they fire it to kill the elites, that there's damage that appears on the ring. There's a small crack where you can start to see exposed circuits. And then when the prelate shows up after Shadow Intent arrives back at the base, that crack has gotten bigger after the minister fired the Halo as Shadow of Intent approached. The idea was for the Halo ring to kill everybody on the Shadow of Intent, but since everybody was packed into the Phantoms and hung back, they were far enough away that they just got really disoriented instead of dead.
So if their brains completely scrambled, they just got a little jarred up a bit.
But the prelate and Half-Jaw and the Scion, they're fighting the Yanmei. The prelate gets hit. He, you know, his shields drop. He's injured really bad. He basically pulls off a bandolier of grenades after the Half-Jaw and the Scion realize there's no way they're going to be able to figure out how to operate the elevator to get out because the Yanmei couldn't even figure out how to open the door. The prelate pulls off basically a bandolier of grenades and is crawling over to a pit that leads down into the power facility or power distribution room for the facility. And as this is going on, the ring is powering up, so it's becoming harder and harder to focus on things. You know, the prelate, Half-Jaw, and the Scion are feeling the effects of the Halo as the energy builds. So the prelate basically tells the Half-Jaw and the Scion to run and he'll take care of the base. And he drops the grenades down into the power room. The Half-Jaw and the Scion get away and the station blows up, taking the Halo ring with it.
And then we kind of have a little epilogue of the Shadow Intent back in orbit above Duran. And he's talking with the Arbiter, telling him kind of how the plan got defused and that St. Helios is safe. And at this point, they start talking about having female crew and female engaging, and the Arbiter is like, yeah, this is something that a lot of the traditions that we have held are going to have to change in this new age. So there's that, and then he also gives Half-Jaw the opportunity to retire, basically, and have a high-ranking political position within the St. Healy leadership, but he decides to take on an even bigger task and stay with the Shadow of Intent.
And it's interesting, the reasoning. When they inspected the prelate ship, they found a lot of jump coordinates where Sanshun ships went. But the one thing that Half-Jaw comes away with from this is there are Sanshun out there that want to do harm to elites. but there's also Sanshum that do not. And he has his mission. He wants to hunt down those Sanshum that want to seek revenge against the elites and stop them. He doesn't want to kill all Sanshum, just the ones that the troublemakers. So he comes away with a different look on the Sanshum.
And that's where we end.
All in all, I really enjoyed it.
So did I. It was a nice, light read. It kind of had some nice, good, relevant additions to the universe to add some stuff, especially with the mini Halo and the Prelate, which we had never seen before. Because we had seen, what was it, in Broken Circle, which I still haven't read all the way through, some history about the Sanshayum and the breeding and all that stuff. So it's interesting to see how the Sanshayum did have a side of them that could be combative and not just sitting in their floaty chairs. And then kind of a little bit of filling the gap of how we went from the structure, the political structure from Halo 3, most of the fighting elites being strictly male, to Halo 5, where we see Vadam's Keep being run by a female leader. So having that change over, having that kind of be explained here and the start of that, that was also cool to see as well. Just seeing a familiar ship, the Shadow of Intent, which we saw in Halo 3, be kind of reused and retooled and get to learn a little bit more about Halfjaw and the Blade Master and a little bit of Sangheili history as well. In addition, I'll echo what Pins put in the chat too. It's Joe Staten. So for having him being able to write out some of the stories in his mind and put them on paper as official canon is also a treat in and of itself.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Overall, great short read. It took me 3 days to read it, reading about an hour or so a day. I don't know how long the audiobook is.
It's about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it took me about three...
It's a pretty quick listen.
...ish hours. Yeah, I figured it would be. No guarantees on when we'll do our next book. Probably in a month or so, if not earlier, unless I get another book done pretty quick. Of course, there is one other book out there, which I think is short. Is Smoke and Shadow short? I don't remember if it is. I think there's one other book that I haven't read that's a short one. Not sure what exactly we're doing next, but as soon as I figure it out, then I'll let everybody know.
Well, right now I'm ankle deep in, about waist deep in Retribution.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a lot of other ones I want to catch up on before I jump into that one.
Oh, you need to.
Fair enough.
You need to catch up before you start on Retribution.
Fair enough. I've got some reading to do over the next month or so. Which hopefully I'll have time.
Yeah, we've done Last Light, didn't we?
Yes, we did do Last Light and New Blood.
Last Light and Fractures are required reading before this book.
Yeah, because it talks about Blue Team, right? Right? It talks about Fred, Linda, and Kelly? Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. Because what was the other book that talks about Gray Team?
About Blue Team?
Gray Team. I thought there was a book on Gray
Team. No, not... Gray Team is, that one is still coming. Original one was Cold Protocol. But this one. The characters in this one are Blue Team, and the Spartans 3s from Onyx.
That's right.
From Ghost of Onyx.
Okay.
And into the Karen Travis trilogy too, so.
Well, I will be reading quite a few books. I know I have Tales from Slipspace, Fractures, Broken Circle. I don't remember what other ones at the moment. I think there's at least 3 other ones that I haven't read yet. I'm looking through my list of books on my Kindle.
Oh, yeah. The latest one was Halo Envoy was Gray Team. Thanks, Pens.
Okay. Thought there was one. So yeah, I have Smoke and Shadow, Hunters in the Dark, Envoy, and then, and actually, I never read Thursday War. Or no, was it Moral Dictata? No, Moral Dictata was the third book. I never read that book either. Probably should. But that's it for the podcast tonight. Thank you for tuning in to us while we rambled through Shadow of Intent. Like I said before, we'll be doing another book at some point, probably around another month or so. May get a guest on depending on which book we end up with and who would like to be on to talk about it. In the meantime, you can check us out on all of our social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, Mixer. If we have it, just slash Podtacular. We'll get you there to whatever service you're looking for. A quick update on our company commendations. We are so, so close on killing enemy Spartans. As of right now, which this is constantly in flux, but we have another 469 kills before we get No Hard Feelings complete.
Woohoo!
That will be done, if not tomorrow, by Friday. Heck, if you... It might be... Well, depending on who's playing, it could be slow enough to where you might unlock it during Fraggin' Fridays this weekend.
It is entirely possible.
So if anyone's listening and paying attention, just make sure you don't go over... 400, so we can get the pack on stream. Speaking of streams,
well, even if we get it before, I will make a point of opening it on stream.
Awesome. We also have, speaking of streams, our Fraggin' Fridays, which take place on 8:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fridays. That will be broadcasted on Podtackler's Twitch, and we haven't gotten the RTMP stuff yet, so.
Now that I actually come home at a normal time, I should be able to actually work on it and get it set up to where I can stream on both at the same time. Still got some bugs to work out, but I should be able to get it streamed on both Mixer and Twitch at the same time.
Sounds good. Tune into that. You can send Godzilla T an invite on Xbox, and then he'll be able to invite you to the party, whatever the lobby decides to choose, whether it's going to be Warzone, Arena, Matchmaking, or Custom Games. On the 25th, which will be next week, we'll have the Halo 3 throwback. So probably next week's Fraggin' Fridays will be quite a bit of Halo 3 throwback. Or at least I would imagine so.
Well, at least until the lobby gets too big.
Get some like Halo 3 big team in there. That'd be kind of cool. But I have a feeling it's going to be just
there
four.
There is V4s. Currently a on our Xbox group
club
group. There is a LFG up for achieving Halo for this coming Saturday,
yay,
the 23rd. I do have
23rd. I was just being silly.
Yeah, that's what I said, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was just being silly. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I do currently have two people that are confirmed. I need one more. So if you are interested, just respond to the post in the club and we will get you in. This one is at 7 p.m. Eastern. I will start sending out invites around 6:30 to get everybody gathered up. So if you're interested, just go ahead and reply to that looking for group and I will get you in.
And I will make sure I get a tweet out and a Facebook post out so people can join up in the club and then join the looking for group. And that way we can get another episode out. Because it's been, what?
Too long.
Yeah, 2 months probably at least.
Something like that. Well, my work schedule lately, I would, even if I had one recorded, I wouldn't have had time to work on it.
The zombie schedule. Which hopefully is going to be unzombified for the foreseeable future.
Hopefully. I was able to come home at a normal time tonight, so.
Yay! That's
things are looking up.
So make sure you check out the Xbox Club. You can head on over to podtacular.com/Xbox, and that'll take you right there to the website where you can request to join, and then we accept everybody that requests to join. So it's just one of those admin things that you have to do with the club. send us a request and we will get you on. Also, for our Spartan company, we do have 5 slots open. We are still slowly turning towards the helmet. We have the 2 ones at the bottom, which is Kill Marines. We have 14,375 out of 19,200. So another 4,825 to go. And then the second to last one is the Forget to Pay the Toll, which is kill a driver of a moving vehicle using a sniper rifle. We currently have 101 on our 4th tier to get that. Where's Keys and who's the other guy?
Confell?
Yeah, Confell when you need them. Those are the ones that we need the most desperately. So if you're in our Spartan company, then try to get those if you can. Otherwise, just join up on Fridays and whenever you can during the week. And we hope to see you in a couple of play dates and hopefully the Achievement Halo stuff too. Remember, you can check out our podcast network that we are a part of, which is a group of gaming specific shows. It includes shows like Critscast, Guardian Radio, The Learning Cliff, Podcast 76, and then Work in Progress and How to Murder Time are a little more generic, but they are part of the network. You can head on over to thepodcast.com to find out more about all the podcasts on the network and let them know that we sent you there. And say hi. Next week, not sure what we're doing yet. Might be a slow week, might be a guest week. Let you all know as soon as we decide what we're going to do. But we appreciate everyone tuning in to the live streams, whether you're tuning to us via Mixer or Twitch. And for everyone listening to us via download on iTunes or whatever other podcast aggregator, we appreciate your support. And we will catch you all next week. Keep on fragging those stinking prelates, which hopefully we just killed the last one.